That's what I do for a living. And I was tipped off, kind of, that Epstein had bought a bunch of penguin pineal glands. That's weird. Frozen. Started looking into it. I was like, that's a weird signal. Started looking into it. And the penguin, if you don't know what the pineal gland is, back up, right? It sits in your brain. It's an organ, and it's responsible for producing serotonin. It controls your sleep-wake cycles. It's the site of action for hallucinogenics like DMT, right? It's in a ton of, like, psychological research for, like, depressive disorder and, like, mania and schizophrenia, stuff like that. It's in a lot of research from, like, noetic stuff, like psychic abilities, which is wild. Everybody likes a pineal gland, right? It is very, very broken. Gets calcified by fluoride, right? You can actually see it, like, get cloudy. In fact, like, adults today have very little pineal function as compared to, like, 100 years ago. So anyway, they bought a bunch of penguin pineal glands that are frozen. So I started looking into the differences between human pineal glands and penguin pineal glands. Apparently, penguin pineal glands have a really high concentration of this compound, or sorry, this enzyme called HIOMT, right? HIOMT is responsible. It's like a little organic machine. So you give it stuff and it, like, converts that compound into other compounds, right? It is responsible for producing some of the endogenous, like, already in our body, DMT that we make. So why would they want this? They can buy DMT. Like, I'm sure they have a DMT dealer, right? This video is so gonna get taken down. Because in synthetic chemistry, what we very frequently do is we say, you know, we don't know, like, the best way to make this compound. Even the smallest changes to compounds can significantly alter their effects. So what a lot of people do is they just, like, throw spaghetti on the wall and see what sticks. So they give this enzyme a bunch of different compounds, like a racemic mix is what we call it. But they just say, you know, all these random compounds, HIOMT will absolutely work on these, and they'll produce new compounds that we've never seen and characterized and identified before. But if we can make them, and if we can make them in high enough concentrations, we can absolutely separate them out from each other. We can purify them out, right? And then we can give them to unsuspecting people, probably, because they're evil demons, right? And we can see how they impact humans. So my best guess is that's what they were doing. That's what the human pineal glands were for, the penguin pineal glands were for, right? Is that they were just trying to give this enzyme just a random mix of stuff and seeing what came out in the wash, and then using those compounds in human research. Unfortunately, your brain cannot handle that much of, like, serotonin input, because DMT hits the serotonin system, right? You can't handle that much serotonin input for very long. You will absolutely fry those neurons. So if this is what they were doing, and if they gave those drugs to people, and if they were stronger or had a longer half-life or whatever than DMT, they were absolutely frying people's brains. I can't think of, unless you had someone like me that was on the team that could, like, preempt all of this stuff and say, you know, we're going to be creating a lot of oxidative stress. We need to get these people on this, like, perfect diet, and we need to regulate the doses, and we need to have so many breaks in between doses and all this other stuff, right? There's no way you're not going to fry people's brains. So that is my guess, my best guess for why they wanted a bunch of frozen penguin pineal glands, is they were trying to make new drugs.
All right, folks, we'll be right back with Jay Dyer and Jamie Dyer in studio. We're going to get into the weirdness that Epstein was into, like you just saw there. Stay tuned. It's warroominforeigns.com/show.
Of the old order is coming. There's a lot of jockeying by some of the same power groups to be in control in the future. But you still got the central banks, you still got the big panopticon, AI, surveillance systems, all the big tech is. And They're still going to try to stay in control, but because they're exposed, it's going to get harder.
I'd like to have Dodge for now.
And harder and harder. I haven't plugged yet today because the news has been so incredibly hardcore. But the products really are amazing, and that's how we fund our operations, so I need your support. We have a flash weekend sale today through Monday, March 9th, 50% off methylene blue capsules. It's the very same high-quality methylene blue that's in the tincture. 50% off that when you buy ultramethylene blue tincture. Again, the pills are great for travel. It's the best methylene blue out there. You really owe it to yourself. Tommy Robbins was blown away by it yesterday here in studio. And we have the March Mega Sale, 40% off on NAD, Ultimate Burn, Life Force CMOS, methylene blue tincture, and more. Take advantage of that right now at thealexhomestore.com.
Dismantling the globalist agenda hour by hour. This is the War Room with Harrison Smith.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, joined in studio by Jay Dyer and Jamie Dyer. You can, of course, go to Jay's analysis. You can go to Jay Dyer on X and YouTube. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Harrison. Glad to be here. We just had a John Hagee impersonation challenge in there with Alex a minute ago, and
The Blood Moons of Israel. Buy my new book, In Defense of Israel, where you'll learn that Jesus was not the Messiah.
So I know we're going to talk a lot about like Epstein and stuff, but let's start with that. How do we combat this? How do we combat this apocalyptic death cult that is getting us into war with Iran?
The only way to combat it is to continue what we do, which is to wake people up to the life cult of Orthodox Christianity, in my view. So that's the solution, to give people more than just news, but also a worldview, a paradigm to live by. I think that's really the only way. It's going to take longer to go that route, but until we reclaim transcendent values and foundations and we don't just live according to the passions and degeneracy, we're not going to fix things.
Yeah, it seems like there has to be like a spiritual element to it, because logically I can't figure it out. I'm like, there's a gap in my understanding of the world, and I'm just like, demons are at work here, because it's completely illogical. It makes no sense, but it seems like something is possessing these people trying to get us into war. It's crazy.
What do you think about that book list? That doesn't Jeff Epstein have a nice Amazon wish list of books before he supposedly passed away?
Well, speaking of demons and aliens, of all of the names that came out in the Epstein files, a couple stood out to me, one being Deepak Chopra, who said, God is not real, only little girls are real, pleasure is real, and the Dalai Lama. And here is an interesting book list that they found from his Amazon.com. So he was ordering books, Secrets of Western Tantra, Modern Sex Magic, The Jesus Dynasty, Chakra and Kundalini Workbook, Ecstasy Through Tantra, etc. So he was very into Eastern mysticism and demonic activity, right?
Right.
So I am going to do, you know Courtney Turner?
Yeah, of course.
So we're going to do this whole 600-page book on the Dalai Lama. So I just brought some notes from that, and I brought some notes from a book that I just read called Cults of the Shadow by Kenneth Grant, who was a protege of Aleister Crowley, who you've been mentioning a little bit on the show because of the files. So this all goes into ETs, yoga, tantra. And the West kind of views Tibetan mysticism as sort of like a sanitized enlightenment from the East. It's like they promote nonviolence, rationalism, stuff like that. But there is a shadow behind the person who they call the living Buddha, the Dalai Lama, right? And he was also into some espionage, if you want to mention that.
Yeah, in World War II, the previous or two Dalai Lamas back, however many it was, Western intelligence in general, whether the CIA or Nazi intelligence, tried to sort of make alliances with the Dalai Lama to shore up support geostrategically for the region of Tibet. Of course, we know about, you know, Himmler taking that journey of his soldiers into Tibet, into the Himalayas, to try to find the root race and all this kind of stuff out of Blavatsky's ideology. But geostrategically, it's also been something that the West has seen as a way to shore up support against China. So the Free Tibet Project is a famous CIA operation, declassified now, which people thought about and wrote about for many years. But now we know it's declassified, I think, 6 months ago, that The Dalai Lama was essentially made an asset of Western intelligence to some degree. It doesn't mean that he was trained as a, you know, assassin or something like that, but he was basically working with Western intelligence against China.
And you could say the Dalai Lama and American intelligence would have shared interests. They'd want to work together anyway.
Exactly, right.
And it's just interesting to me. It's like there are a couple figures from history and even now where it's like the Dalai Lama, Mother Teresa, Gandhi, and it's like all of these characters, you don't want to look too far under the surface. But they've been given this just sort of cloak of you know, perfectness by the media decade over decade, where their names almost become a byword of righteousness and purity.
Yes.
And the truth is a lot more...
Well, all of those figures have some degree of co-opting intelligence-wise, at least perhaps in the case of Mother Teresa, you could argue it's not totally clear, but her orphanages have been investigated for trafficking.
Right.
But also in the case of... Gandhi was a Fabian socialist, and there's a lot of evidence to suggest that he also worked with British intelligence, and he attended the funeral of Madame Blavatsky. So he was interested in theosophy, Fabian socialism. Same with Blavatsky. That's all a Rothschild intelligence network operation. So we're beginning to see patterns here of, oh, well, that's why Blavatsky was going to meet with Soviet intelligence. Those were her ascended masters, are actually Soviet intelligence handlers. And people like Nicholas Rorick out of Soviet Russia. So sometimes these mystical missions are actually cover for espionage, reconnaissance, that kind of stuff.
Kind of a disturbing amount. And then there's the weird connections where Gandhi has things where he was testing his purity by sleeping in the same bed as little girls. And then, you know, Dalai Lama went viral a couple years ago with a really creepy video where he's like licking a little kid. It's so weird. But yeah, thank you, your Majesty, or whatever they call him. Like,
I'm just trying to be spiritual.
I know, right?
Why are you acting weird?
Geez, you know, Catholics, they do the cross, and you know, I guess the Dalai Lama licks little children. It just creepy. So there's some creepiness under the surface.
It's completely creepy. And what we've been given is this Hollywood whitewashed version of the spirituality, talking about compassion, breathing, mindfulness, those buzzwords. You have, you know, Richard Gere and Sting, right?
Right, the new age sort of just yoga kind of.
But for
free love thing.
Many Tibetan temples, there is a secret room where the public can't enter, and often is forbidden to women. And this is a very underneath, it's a very misogynistic religion, and that's why it's very sad to see a lot of people getting into yoga and these Eastern, because when they get into the heart of it, it's all about sucking the female's life force out and discarding them.
Well, they actually hate women.
They do. So,
right.
Yeah.
Women are latrines?
Yes. Okay, so the women can't go into these rooms where you're going to see animal skins. You're going to see images of wrathful deities holding severed heads and gushing blood everywhere, garlands of skulls, just total nightmare fuel.
Temple
right?
of Doom.
Right, right.
Yes. So this Buddhism is not about peace. It's about power, right? And specifically male power. And the central mystery of this tantric Buddhism involves the sacrifice of the feminine, they call it. And this is the sorcery that manipulates erotic love, not for partnership or romance, but to accumulate, they say, the universal androcentric power. So it's also about androgyny. So it's not about men either.
This is why Crowley took all of his tantric stuff from that.
Yes.
Right, to channel the magic. And he said the booty hole is better than the vagina. Literally.
Yes, so the OTO is like the Order of the Eastern Templars. So what he was trying to do is take these things and mix it with Western magic and create something else, right? And so for the Dalai Lama, like you mentioned, the ritual is politics, and you can't separate their magic from the statecraft. And they believe that they are controlling the cosmos as well as the mundane world.
Whoa. Yeah, that's really interesting. I feel like I can't tell what the connection is yet, but I feel like there's something to do with the Iran war that's connected there. The magic affecting the real world and sort of making your own miracles come true by, you know, your own force. Do you see the line I'm trying to draw here?
We kind of were getting into this in the last hour over there with Stefan Molyneux, which is I see a connection between usury and sodomy.
Right.
So there's a connection between the promotion of sort of degenerate sexual practices, removing women from the natural function of having a family and kids, and then you have basically just the fulfillment of the passions, which is sterile, it doesn't produce life, in the same way that usurious banking systems – do not produce. They are really just rapacious, and they're sort of predatory.
Right.
And people have actually historically written about how usury and sodomy go together, because a society that's usurious is also a sodomy-based society.
Wow. Yeah, that's fascinating. Yeah, so sacrificing the feminine. And so, sorry, it just the way that you phrased it, I thought was really good. So it's they basically, the statecraft and the mysticism are intertwined. Can you elaborate a little on that?
So he's just like the universal king.
Right.
Right, the Dalai Lama is. And how they get to this place is the use of women's sexuality. So going back to the Buddha, his mother, who was named Queen Maya, which is also the word for illusion, right? So the mundane world, the physical world, is seen as feminine. It's not real. It's something to transcend or sacrifice on your way to apotheosis, okay? And so she died 7 days after giving birth to Buddha. And they see this not as a tragedy, but as a theological necessity, because they have to transcend the physical world. For the spirit to triumph, they say the mother has to be removed from the picture, and enlightenment requires the destruction and transcendence of the feminine natural world. So that's why you see, well, not the only reason, but you do see a lot in popular culture where the tale of the hero starts with the death of the mother, right?
Right.
And so very many Disney movies have this, not just for trauma, but they're also trying to implement these Eastern ways of thinking into the West, right?
Another reason for that, by the way, is because Eastern thinking is typically collectivist.
Right.
And Aldous Huxley, in his book Perennial Philosophy, says that we have to inculcate this collectivist perspective in the West.
Everyone belongs to everyone else, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Then you're bound to the morals of the global village.
Right.
No boundaries.
And this, you know, one thing I always think about, I was talking to a Christian missionary who would go to, I think it was Thailand, but he would try to rescue women that were trapped in sex slavery. And like his biggest barrier was their own unwillingness to change their condition, because religiously they're taught, you know, life is pain and you're sort of a bad person if you try to stop the suffering that you're experiencing. I didn't really understand it, but this guy, I mean, he's talking from personal experience and he's going, look, there are women in really bad situations, but like they thought it was a sin to try to change that, and they wouldn't come, even though we're like, we can take you away, we can take you to the West, you can be free. They wouldn't do it because there's this religious inclination to like feel bad about not suffering. I don't know if y'all have run into that.
Wasn't Santa Claus, St. Nicholas, didn't he rescue women from sex slavery?
Yes, that's
so
the
Orthodox Christianity is the opposite.
The
like right. Opposite with Orthodoxy is that no, you don't have to be a slave. At least ideally you shouldn't if there's a way out. So
yeah, sex slavery was the way of the pagan world until Christendom, and he came and dethroned all of that temple prostitution, basically. But for the Buddha, he calls women wandering latrines and a swamp of garbage. So people who are like anti-patriarchy or anti-Christian and they want to go to these mystical Eastern religions and they get embroiled in these ideas of thinking.
Like Instagram yoga chicks that think that it's like,
Yeah.
They think this is so peaceful and nice, but it's not.
No.
So in early Buddhism, the female body was viewed with absolute disgust, and monks were instructed to meditate on the decomposition of female corpses, and the goal was to kill their own sexual desire.
Oh, my God.
So basically it's fake and gay.
I think that's gross. What I'm hearing, yeah.
Question about some fake and gay.
It gets really gross, too, and if we get started talking about Kenneth Grant, it gets even worse. But so in Buddhism, a woman cannot achieve full enlightenment as a woman. You have to be reborn as a man, and then you're on your way. So it's like a biological glass ceiling. A woman must generate enough good karma to be born again as a man. Mm. And that's what you guys were talking about. You don't interfere with other people's karma because they have done something to deserve their circumstances in this life.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense. And I guess personally they can go, well, I deserve this situation that I'm in because my past life or whatever. Mm-hmm. That's extremely dangerous. And then there's elements of the human sacrifice there too. I guess not literal, but mental, I guess, mentally sacrificing the women. Or are they physically?
All of it.
Yeah.
Well, there's they have a teaching of a left-handed path that you have to go down in order to fully experience the totality of reality. You can't just be good. You also have to experience all forms of evil.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's part of the tantric left-hand path, right?
And that's some Sabbatine Frakeism, and there's a bunch of heresies that follow that.
Yeah, so the tantra is explicitly sexual, but it's not about pleasure or partnership or children or family. The method they call the method is masculine and wisdom is feminine. And there's also a correlation between the Greek philosophy of Zeus and this, because Zeus swallows wisdom and gives birth to Athena from his own head.
Right.
And so the male method of Tantra eats the women. He manipulates and appropriates the female wisdom. And so you have these yogis, these gurus, these mystical guys. They are trying to unite with women to absorb their energy, and they call this gynergy, right?
Okay, gynergy. Makes sense. Yeah. Sure, yeah, why
so
not?
The vital power or force that the yogi is after, and the goal of the practitioner of Tantra is to become androgynous.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
To transcend above gender divisions,
mm-hmm.
because you're more enlightened if you understand the
exactly.
the sophisticated understanding that gender is a social construct. That's
exactly.
Yeah, amazing.
It's illusion.
Right.
He needs the fuel of the feminine energy because he lacks that specific vitality. So the woman is basically a battery that is to be used up, and the husk or the person afterwards is discarded once it is drained. So the yogi uses the woman as a tool, and once he's got the juice, we can talk about the juice, he throws away the fruit, literally. And so she is no more of use to him than a nutshell.
Yeah. Wow. And people have no idea that this is the way that Eastern religions.
So when you go and sit with your yogi or your Maharishi or your guru and you're worshiping, Osho is a good example of that, right? Who turned out to be working with the government and having a cult, trying to murder people, take over the town,
right?
Get all of their votes.
Was this the
Wild Country?
Yeah. Oh my God. That's like one of the most informative documentaries of all time.
Yeah.
Because that one has that characterization where it's all sort of upper class neoliberal like professionals that just get sucked into this like weirdo sex cult stuff. And it's like, these are intelligent, thoughtful American people, but they just fall for this crap. Why is it people like that and not field workers and construction workers that get pulled into this stuff?
I always ask that, how do they pay their bills?
Right.
They're so dumb.
It was the same with Heaven's Gate too. Like that was all like a bunch of wealthy, you know, yuppie professionals that were into Heaven's Gate, and they're like, yeah, we're going to catch the tail of Hale Bob Comet right away. It was like, what?
Like, why? Yeah. What is it about that? Cause I mean, I guess you can see it sort of all over the place. It's the, you know, it's academia. It's people that go to college. They come out, you know, thinking all of this weirdo exotic stuff is, I guess it's fascinating, but, you know, it just makes it even more abundantly clear how right Christianity is. It's like we're the only religion that actually treats women correctly. People don't know that. And I'm even seeing now things of, you know, women making the argument that, you know, the hijab is actually about freeing women because it blocks you from the male gaze. I mean, there's this weird sort of inversion where women who are feminists gravitate to the most misogynistic religions. It's wild.
There's a sort of a punishment complex there where they sort of have this inner desire to want to be dominated, I think, because they don't see masculinity typically in the West, and so they sort of grasp for what they perceive to be a dominating masculine force, which is Islam, which is not. It's actually a terrible cult once you study Islam in depth, which I ended up doing the last several years. So it's ridiculous. And by the way, the veiling doesn't even come originally from Muhammad. It's actually a Byzantine tradition that was adopted.
Interesting.
And then they sort of took it crazy with, you know, basically covering your entire
face.
Because
Christianity has traditions where, you know, women have to be covered when they go into church. And obviously, you know, if you're a nun and you're wearing the habit, that's completely different than, you know, the 7-year-old happy birthday, put the hood on. You know, I mean, these are, you know, completely different things, even though people try to relate them. Jamie, as a woman, what the hell, you guys? I mean, what do you, why, like, and I'm kidding, obviously, but it is a very sort of female phenomenon that women will like gravitate towards these really misogynistic states of mind, worldviews, religions. Why do you think that is?
I don't know. I mean, I was just making a joke the other day, like if the feminists could have been good for anything, it would have been, you know, stopping Islamification.
One would think.
But it feminism doesn't have to make sense.
Feminism has always been astroturfed. That's the thing. It's like it's not a real organic movement that women just decided, oh, we want to be, you know, not having to work in factories, and we want to have the right to vote. It was always AstroTurf. It was always supported by cunning elites and banking elites that knew that this would upend society by getting women to think that they've been deprived of not having the role of a man, which is just insidious. And it's actually, as Tim Gordon often says, or Andrew Wilson, Rachel Wilson often point out, it's the original gender dysmorphia.
Yeah.
To make you think that you're being sold a lie by not being a man. When it's like, they're complementary. Men and women
are
complementary,
course.
Obviously. And by the way, as Jamie was saying, like, it's an attack on the source of life.
Yep.
I mean, we come from women. We don't come from test tubes.
Well, you can't separate men and women. You can't. If you are anti-woman, you're anti-man. If you're anti-man, you're anti-family. So you can't. It's, if you wanted a good example of Eastern thought about this, the Tao is one of those things, the yin-yang. That's like male and female. You cannot separate those. But for Tantra, there's three kinds of women. So you have your flesh and blood partner, step one. Use all the women that you can, collect all of their energy, and discard them, right? And then step two is the imaginary woman. And so you have these specific tantras that cite preference for young girls, ideally between 12 and 16. So that's why you have Jeffrey Epstein interested in this age
tantric
group and tantric stuff. So for them, the youth represents this pure, untapped energy. And older women are often described as demons, as jackal-faced, as seen as having bad energy, or just basically being drained of all of their vitality already. Right.
But there's a reason that's 12 to 16, right? Not even younger. You'd think the younger you are, the more energy you have, but there's a fertility aspect to it as well, isn't there?
Yeah, it's the endocrine...
when the hormones are firing.
Right.
Yeah.
A little past puberty, basically.
So
once the yogi has become proficient in manipulating real women, like I said, he creates this imaginary woman, this goddess that he visualizes and engages with her in his mind. So that's his dream girl, right?
Okay.
And this is something that you see a lot of people just engaging in, not knowing that this is like demonic, but just pornography or dream girls or, you know, digital fantasy stuff.
Right.
Okay. This is step two of the demonic
manifestation. Are you referring to the Tom Hanks movie, Dream Girls?
The Beyonce movie?
Beyonce?
Yeah. We're your dream girl. No.
I knew there was something demonic about Dream
Beyonce
Girls.
Beyonce might actually apply to this.
Well, yeah. I mean, I have a whole thing about how she is the archetype of a Scarlet Woman.
Mm-hmm.
Not that she exactly knows what's going on, but the people use these girls in rituals, right?
Yeah.
So the final stage, the yogi has internalized this feminine principle and absorbed all the women's essence, and he has become the autocratic ruler of his own universe. Right. So relations with women are like this booster rocket that you use and then you discard it when you're out of the atmosphere.
I'm imagining the Ghostbusters containment unit that like saps in all the,
sucking all the women's
that's
energy.
All the, like your ex-girlfriends are this little machine that you tap into. Is that the idea?
It's like the thing in Ghostbusters.
Exactly.
So these these lamas, these teachers, these gurus, they're actually think of themselves as grand sorcerers who can become higher than the Buddha with these practices. And for them, the source of reality comes with cities or magic powers.
Okay. Well, we're going to pick it up right there because we're going to continue this discussion on the other side, because I think this gives a lot of insight into maybe what Jeffrey Epstein was doing with all the young women. It actually fits perfectly. He thought he was some sort of yogi.
I'm making this announcement on Tuesday, March 3rd, 2026. You have until the 17th of March to take advantage of the March mega sale at theoliveshowstore.com. This is one of the biggest sales of the year yet. Up to 40% off store wide, 25% off on the shirts, on the hats, 10% off on things like the collectible knives, and up to 40% off on supplements like Ultramethylene Blue. And the more you buy, the more you save. These are incredible products. You've seen the rave reviews. You've seen the five-star reviews. These are the very best game-changing supplements available, period. Again, I only sell things that really work because I want you to get them and I want you to love them. We now have an over 90% reorder on the supplements on the site. No one in that industry has it because the products are so good, and obviously you're loyal as well. And I thank you so much for keeping us on the air. We're changing the world. We're battling the globalists. We are having the greatest effect together. That's all of us against the new world order we've ever had. And it's all because of your support of my broadcast and other broadcasts like it. But regardless, the enemy recognizes that InfoWars is the tip of the spear. And the bad guys are continuing, just read the newspapers, try to shut us down as early as late March. We're battling them in court, but it looks like this could be the end. But that's okay, because the info war belongs to the people. The info war is about telling the truth and countering the lies of the globalist. And the AlexJonesStore.com is not owned by me. It's owned by Bigly. The backup Alex Jones Network that's ready is not owned by me. It's owned by them, and I'm going to work for them. And so as long as you support the sponsor, no matter what happens to InfoWars, TheAlexJonesStore.com can keep us on the air. So right now, your purchase at TheAlexJonesStore.com keeps InfoWars going, pays the payroll, the bandwidth, the satellites, all of it. But as soon as InfoWars shuts down, it's more critical than ever that you support TheAlexJonesStore.com because it will move forward into the future as our main sponsor. But regardless, this is a win, man. Has InfoWars not delivered? In Gladiator, he chops up the first four guys when they throw him in the ring, or you know, in the arena, and he says, "Are you not entertained?
Are you not entertained?"
Well, I would say to you, are you not satisfied? Have we not delivered in the fight against the globalists? You bet on the right horse, and I'm asking you to continue to bet on us as the info war continues on, regardless, as we refuse to submit to the tyrants. But the reason this is such a win-win or a non-zero-sum game or a 360 win, the term I coined over a decade ago, is because everybody participating supports freedom, supports the fight against tyrants, the fight for team humanity, against the globalist, and you get incredible products at the same time. So if you haven't tried Ultramethylene Blue or our Bovine Colostrum or our CMOS or our Shilajit, these are all incredible products available right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And if you're going to buy anything on the site, you become a VIP for $30 a month, cancel any time for free, and instantly $40 is put in your account. The second you click in a VIP, when it reoccurs each month, instantly $40 goes in. So you make $10 to spend on top of the $30 you spend, special deals, special offers. And with one click in your profile, you cancel any time for free. So it's a very light commitment, and you get special deals with everything else. So anybody buying anything on thealexjonesstore.com should be a VIP, so make sure you do that. So take advantage of the March Mega Sale right now, running until the 17th at thealexjonesstore.com, and be the reason we'll always stay on the air. Again, I salute you and thank you. Take action now.
Methylene Blue, it is tremendous. I would not be making this video if I didn't believe in it. After I take it throughout the day, I start feeling better and better and better. My workouts, I feel like I'm 15 years younger than I am, and the app that I record my running on proves that my workouts are getting better. So I gotta tell you what, God, family, country, InfoWars, and Methylene Blue. Get it while you can.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Gentlemen, this is The War Room. I'm in studio with Jay Dyer and Jamie Dyer. Jay's new book is called Esoteric Hollywood 3, Sex, Cults, and Apocalypse in Films, the follow-up to his much-acclaimed series of books, Esoteric Hollywood 1 and 2. This is the latest, just published, right? Where can people find this?
A couple months ago, you can get it at jaysanalysis.com in the shop, and don't get it from Jeff Bezos. You get it from me, and you get signed copies. It might be a little while before it ships out because we're on the road, but we do all of our own orders. So, yeah, jaysanalysis.com in the shop. And also, Jamie's books are there. She's got Hollywood Mind Control and a book on culture creation.
Awesome. And it's funny how much of this overlaps, like, you know, whether you're talking about the war in Iran or like Jeffrey Epstein looking up Tantra books, or, and obviously now, Hollywood is just sort of openly demonic. I mean, we talk about this every time we talk. It's just, it used to be that you had to investigate and know symbolism and go, ah, see how they're in a circle. That's a magic circle. Now it's just they're just worshiping Satan on stage. It's just like not even subtle anymore. But it's like how seriously do we need to take this, and how like hardcore? Because I always think back to being in like high school and hearing sort of the old boomers going, yoga, that's from the devil. You know that's Satan, right? That's Satan worship. And I'm like, it's stretching, dude. I'm stretching my muscles, like, good, calm down. But now I see the background, I see the history, I see where it came from, and I'm like, yeah, maybe the boomers were right. Maybe they had something there. I mean, is yoga, as people know it now, still this exercise in Satanism or you know, spirituality, or has it been stripped of that?
You gotta it's just physical? Awaken your kundalini.
Oh, no. Okay, yes. So kundalini is the center of all of this, right? And we were talking about statecraft, and so they view these powers, these magic powers that the Dalai Lama has, or the guru, or the yogi, as legitimate tools of ritual warfare. Mm. And we have a couple examples of that, like men who stare at goats. The First Earth Battalion using New Age principles to fight. And even Hitler had some Tibetan, he had like a tiny little private army from Tibet.
Really?
And so they think to gain the vitality, you have to absorb it from someone else. The male eats the feminine energy. And
consumes
yeah,
it.
Yeah, so
it takes it into themselves.
It's transmuted to vampirism. The fuel. For the masculine is sent to apotheosis. And then I'm going to be doing this really soon, Aleister Crowley's 8 lectures on yoga. So Speaking of ritual magic and Satanism, yes, he was a master yogi, and he had a whole book on yoga, and yoga means union. So okay. You can't just do the stretches and the poses for stretching. You can do calisthenics or Pilates or whatever, but when you're going to yoga, they're going to tell you do these breathing exercises, chant these mantras, have these mudras. You are channeling some type of energy, right?
So the
right.
Union with like a deity?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm.
So he says like 10 times in the first chapter, yoga means union. Yoga means union
with
extraterrestrial beings. So This is kind of the invasion that we're going to see, not like little green men and flying saucers, but energies or demonic
so
manifestations.
You're saying wouldn't touch butts with ET?
ET phone ohm.
There you go.
Oh, that's good.
The name of the show about yoga.
Interesting.
But yeah, so he created the OTO, which is the Order of the Eastern Templars, to specifically channel energies from outer space and from Sirius, right? So the ultimate object of the OTO is to, they say, prepare humanity for the next step towards the awakening of cosmic consciousness by producing initiates who work with the Kundalini. So the Kundalini, if you've never heard of that, it's this energy that lies at the base of your spine, and when you have an orgasm, it travels upward and like sprouts out, and now you're enlightened. Okay. That's not really the Christian ontology of our bodies. We don't really believe in chakras and stuff like that, but they do equate this with Prometheus and with the serpent in the garden, because the Kundalini is the serpent energy.
Got it.
That they would say Eve was enlightened by.
Right, that makes sense. That this was a symbolic interpretation. Yeah.
Yes. And the second goal of the OTO was to, they say, establish on Earth the law of Thelema and the kingdom of Rahurquit. That's just a way of saying Horus.
Okay.
The Egyptian god Horus.
Yeah.
Right? And so they want to use this energy of the Kundalini to establish a gate in space, they say, through which the extraterrestrial energies may enter and manifest on Earth.
And keep in mind, Crowley was also an asset of British intelligence, MI5, too.
Right.
Right.
It's so fascinating how this ties in together. And, of course, Father Seraphim Rose calls out the New Age stuff early on. I think he also connected to UFOs, right?
Yes,
and then Father Spiridon has a whole book about the UFOs.
Satan, Satan and the Kingdom the Kingdom of Satan.
Yes. Yeah. And there's sort of a long history in Orthodox thought of connecting UFOs to sort of New Age Eastern spirituality. And it's all really from the same source or working towards the same ends.
Mm-hmm. And this is theosophy, too. So where we get the UN comes from the Lucifer Trust, which became the Lucius Trust, and then the UN. They are all big on meditating. They're big on ecumenism. They're big on one world religion. But Madame Blavatsky was also in contact with these secret chiefs, they call them. They're hidden masters of Tibet.
I mentioned that ago.
Yeah. And Hitler was one of these devotees of these secret chiefs and hidden masters, and they say when they would come in contact with them, they would bleed from the nose and the ears, and they were terrified and sweaty, and they were like,
had real power.
Yeah.
Wow.
So.
And the connection to Horus in Egypt is really interesting. Obviously, Freemasonry takes it way back to Egypt, and historically, Egypt is a fascinating sort of. I think ancient Egypt was like the example of what they're trying to create on Earth, where you just have. Because they had a culture that lasted basically unchanged for 4,000 years, right? If you want to talk about temporal permanence, the Egyptian culture is absolutely unmatched by thousands of years. And it seems to me like if you're trying to live forever and want to create a persistent culture that can last for thousands of years, Egypt is where you're going to model it after.
Yeah, and those ancient civilizations also, if you believe Genesis, are really just the pattern of Babel. Right. So the Tower of Babel is, if you get into biblical studies and whatnot, a lot of times scholars think that was a ziggurat or some form of a pyramid that was being built. You have the resurgence and the maintenance of that tradition with the Egyptian pyramid. And then all cultures across the world have these pyramids where you sacrifice people at the Kaaba, right. Like Apocalypto with Mel Gibson movie. But that is a repeating spirit of Babel, I think, coming back.
Yeah, and when you describe the Tibetan inner chamber, full of skulls, it sounds verbatim like, the Spanish talking about exploring Teotihuacan, or however you pronounce it, but the Aztec city, and it was flowers and beautiful and kids running around, and then they're like, let's show you our church, and just gore hanging from the ceilings, and like some priest like sawing a guy in half, like, hey, how you doing? And the Spanish people were just like, oh my God. But that's what it was, this inner sanctum where it was just horror and gore and skulls and brutality. It's crazy.
The conquistadors talk about how they would lead them to a giant banquet, and the Spanish would be like, oh, this is neat, and then they would bring out a guy and slit his throat at the table, and
out comes Mads Mikkelsen as Hannibal, and he's like serving you the meal.
And they're all just like, it's going to be delicious. Aren't you happy? And it's like, oh my God. So there's something sort of intrinsic in humanity and our spirituality that like we're drawn to this across cultures, across, millennia. This is a persistent thing. Human sacrifice, the stealing of life force energy. And it seems like it has to do a lot with, again, sort of relating back to the Masons. I've never had this confirmed, but I heard one time, and it stuck with me, is that the G, they say it stands for God and other stuff, but that stands for generative force. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that, right, so, when it comes to fertility, stealing life force, you're talking about usury and sodomy, it's like there's this combat, I guess, between like the generative force and the draining, the vampiric force.
Well, in magic too, so like in Thelema, in OTO, in Golden Dawn, this is also using women to suck out their life force, because you can't attain the godhood in these workings as a woman either. Mm-hmm. Crowley had his scarlet women who he would brand on the chest, like with a hot iron.
Right.
And he would use these girls too in his ritual working, because they know that they can't do anything without a woman, but they don't want women involved.
Right, right.
Right.
So that'd be, there is props.
Yeah. And what another show that I have in my member section, because it's kind of gross, is called Cults of the Shadow. So Kenneth Grant wrote after Aleister Crowley, and he was detailing what he calls the Ophidian current, which is the Kundalini, the Greek word for serpent, right? So it's serpent energy. Remember the Delphi priestess?
Mm-hmm.
Would sit on the fissure and breathe in the smoke, and she would give prophecies. So this was supposed to be the dead serpent that Apollo slayed, and it would give them psychic powers, right?
And that's the image that you see on hospitals.
Yeah. And so the high priestess is the human embodiment of this Kundalini for the men, and they talk about the Kliphot, which is the dark side of the Tree of Life. So Epstein was working with Kabbalah and stuff like that.
Right.
And so there's a good Tree of Life, and then there's a dark side, which is where the demons are.
Right.
And this is where they're specifically working from in the certain left-hand path, they call it, the Varma Marg, which means actually the use of women or black magic.
Okay.
And they work in these zones. It's called the cough zone, and it's a primitive brain region at the back of the head where they say is the regents of the giants or the Nephilim. Now, that is a weird thing to bring out, but they're actually saying in their text that they work with the ancient gods of Sumer, of Mesopotamia, of Atlantis, of the Book of Enoch,
right?
The Watchers and the Nephilim. So this is the same pantheon that they are working with.
Wow. Yeah. And I always think about the Father Seraphim quote where he says, all of the old gods were demons. He says it outright. All of them. All of them were all demons.
Oh, we're doing Orthodoxy and the Religion of the Future very soon. I'm halfway done with that.
So. Yeah. And that is an all-time classic that everybody in our audience should read. So do you think Jeffrey Epstein was believing, like, how do you think this is interpreted by the people practicing it? Because it seems to me like, I don't know, I didn't see much spirituality in Epstein's information.
It seemed like the closest was, I did a whole live stream on my YouTube channel of the Bannon interview. There were significant sections towards the end of the interview where Epstein got into his sort of mystical views, and he was arguing with Bannon saying, well, you know, we can't define the soul in terms of, you know, matter or quantity, but we know that there's some kind of soul that's there. And he says, I believe that reality is a projection of our consciousness, which is a very kind of Gnostic, Kabbalistic type of view. And he says that reality is just math. So he has this Pythagorean mysticism, which to me suggests that he did have some degree of Kabbalistic influence or interest, because that's also in the Kabbalah. He does tout his Judaic supremacy in many of the emails. So that would be, I think, reasonable to assume that that's what he means. He doesn't explicitly say I'm into Kabbalah. He does, however, say I really do find Newton's alchemy fascinating. So there is explicit reference to Pythagoreanism, and sort of a, he says that reality is like a matrix and it's all math code. And
now, which is convenient when you're like, you know, abusing people.
Yeah, it's not real, man. Well, like she's saying about the women, right? Like if reality is not real, then it's, well, I'm not hurting anybody because it's not real.
Yeah, yeah, that's very convenient.
They'll just be born again in another body later on. So
I'm just helping you get reborn to a male, to be a man, and so it's better for me. Right.
Yeah,
for you.
I'm helping you on that first step to resurrection by doing the dirty work. Wow. Yeah. That. So you mentioned Beyonce being a Scarlet Woman. I got to follow up with that. What does that mean?
So what we've been seeing for the past 20 or so years is studying this, and then the use of women as icons of this Scarlet Woman.
Okay.
So Crowley would say this is part Kali, which is an Indian goddess, right?
Yep.
Part Ishtar from Babylon, which is the goddess of love and war. And she was worshipped by temple prostitution. They thought that this was a sacred act, but it wasn't voluntary.
Right.
And it wasn't after 18 years old. This is like taking children, like Epstein would, to his temple on the island and raising some of them to be like goddesses on earth, like a not exactly a Vestal Virgin, but a temple priestess.
Right.
And boys too. Okay, so if you look at goddess worship, and this is where a lot of women get this wrong, like they think that a matriarchy would be more kinder to women, worshiping pregnant ladies on couches, fanning them and eating grit. It's not like that. It's kidnapping young girls, taking them to the temple, raising them to be this avatar of a goddess, and where men would come and pay, and that's how they worship.
Right.
And there's even some, we talked about that on the fourth hour, where the historians were like, every little girl in Babylon had to do this at least one time.
Mm.
Right. And
wow.
So you see the mother goddess is worshipped with self harm.
Okay.
For men, so they would do cross-dressing, they would try and be androgynous like these yogis, right? And they would go out and beg for money, they would do plays, they would cut themselves. You've seen like National Geographic where the wild people are like stabbing and the blood's not coming out.
Yeah.
So this is the type of stuff that goddess worship is involved with,
right?
And, you were talking about Beyonce. Okay, so now you have these giant celebrities. You have, like, Britney Spears. You have larger-than-life women who are in the place of this worship. Instead of Inanna, Ishtar, Sibylle, it's going to be Beyonce, Katy Perry. These, because they have such a wide influence.
Right? Icons and more.
Icons. Like, yeah. And so you follow the symbolism that they put on. Like, we've done many shows about Katy Perry Super Bowl. I have a whole thing on Beyonce and all of her history.
Right. well, and she, and of course, Jay-Z. I mean, they were like really into the whole like we're the Illuminati. They do the sign of the pyramid. I mean, they thought it was cool to like, you know, dress up in that type of.
I think Jay-Z's serious about Crowleyism. Like he's been a devotee openly for many, many years. But so he's pretty serious about it.
I also think they use this in conjunction with the MKUltra Monarch program to give them multiple personalities.
Right.
Split their psyche, make them more susceptible to possession,
right?
Things like that, and it
obviously just, I mean, it's just such a well-known thing. You just think of the South Park episode where they're sacrificing Britney for the corn, and it's like, yeah, that, I mean, she just got arrested for DUI, right? She's just a complete wreck after how they treated her, and you can see the way it's sort of industrialized almost. Where I can never remember the woman's name, but I guess she was is the Miley Cyrus path, as you say. But there's a new
Amanda
one. Amanda Bynes. Okay, there's like a lot, right? That wasn't even the one I was thinking. No, there's one. She hasn't been destroyed yet, but you know, she started off as
JoJo Siwa.
She's another one, right? Yeah. So they start off as like these very sort of wholesome, people that you know, little girls can see themselves in, and then the moment they're 18, they're out, you know, twerking on stage and just being complete degenerates, and it's like obviously a designed path that they're following. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And who was in the files? Jay-Z.
Right. Well, exactly, and of course ties into the Puff Daddy abuse rings, and yeah.
One of the Epstein emails was him saying, "By the way, if you need me to, I can send Britney Spears to one of these facilities."
Right.
That was crazy. I didn't even expect that. Was crazy for me. I was like, "That's too conspiratorial for me."
Right. Right.
I'm like, "Come on, Jeffrey, you're more of a conspiracy theorist than I am." But
seriously,
everybody forgets too that clip. I think it's Barbara Walters, but it's been around for forever. It's a classic conspiracy clip where. I think it's Barbara Walters is interviewing Britney Spears in the mid early 2000s, and she dissociates. Do you know? Have you seen that?
I don't know.
Yeah, it's a classic clip. You can probably find it on YouTube or somewhere. But she's like, she says something, and it maybe triggers her, and it's normal Britney, and then she turns into a child.
Whoa!
Now she could have been stoned or on.
Yeah.
But it's pretty.
But that's also going to happen if you're being
mentally disturbed like that.
It's a noticeable
different personality.
Yeah, and again, people, you know, this isn't something like. Vague that we're talking about, like these are scientific, you know, phenomena where you can create personalities, you can split people's personalities through trauma. Like, you know, this isn't just speculation. It's like, no, they have this down to a science to a certain degree. You can actually create, you know, split personalities in people. You can hypnotize. I mean, hypnotism is real. Like, these things are very tangible and real, and people don't, I don't think, respect them enough.
John C. Lilly's book, Programming and Metaprogramming in the Human Biocomputer, the very last chapter has a section on dosing children with LSD to create different personalities.
Right.
Explicitly.
I'm sure.
I bought that book because I didn't think, I was like, there's no way he really says that. But he actually does.
But, I mean, yeah, they get away with it.
Well, in the Epstein files too, they talk about, you know, the goy and the other, right? Like, so they've set themselves over and against the rest of humanity. And this is also, you can find it in Thelema in what's called Liber Oz. And one of the passages is the slaves shall serve. So he's saying, it's kind of the antithesis.
Yeah.
Of you know, in the Bible where it says the first shall be last,
yeah,
you know, be humble and you will be exalted in heaven,
right?
So Liber Oz is the opposite of that. The kings are going to rule in tyranny, and the slaves are always going to be as they always were.
Right. That's fascinating. So how does this tie into, like, because I'm just thinking, excuse me, I see we brought up like the Sabatini and Frankis. I see a lot of conversations about, like, obviously what's going on right now with Jeffrey Epstein in Iran. It's all about these Abrahamic faiths. It's about Islam, Judaism, and Christianity. How important is the Eastern stuff in what's going on today? Is it involved in the spiritual makeup of the world right now, or is this a side issue when we should be focusing on the big three?
I would actually argue that there are not three Abrahamic faiths, because if you believe Christianity, if you believe the Bible, Paul's very clear in Galatians 3 and 4 that Christianity is the only Abrahamic faith. For example, the Old Testament, a lot of people assume that it teaches a generic monotheism or Unitarianism. The Old Testament teaches the Trinity. Even the Jewish Kabbalists admit that there's multiplicity in God in the Old Testament. So So the Old Testament deity that appears is Jesus. Jesus makes this very clear in John 5 through 9 that he's the one that appeared to Abraham.
Right.
And no one sees the Father at any time. So that means that in the Old Testament, you have multiple persons in God. That would be the Trinity in the Old Testament. Therefore, there is no such thing as an Unitarian Old Testament faith that's Abraham worshiping Allah or something like that. And then when you get into scholarship that's recent today about Islam, it's pretty well known and pretty consistently admitted that Islam is based on a lot of Talmudic legends.
Right.
It's based on Gnostic legends and stories that were not canonical scripture, and that's because Muhammad was illiterate and he was hearing these stories being taught, and he kind of crafted his religion, which he said was originally the revelation of God to the Arabs. So right. The Jews had the Torah, Christians had their Jesus in Geo gospel. He's going to create the religion for the Arab peoples. And then it morphed later on into, no, actually, I need to conquer for everybody
right.
to accept this. So I would argue there's not three Abrahamic faiths, but to your point about Eastern mysticism, the same ideas that she's talking about with Eastern esoteric stuff is the same Gnostic philosophy that influenced the Talmud and Neoplatonism. I know there's a little bit of a difference.
Kabbalah, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So Eastern mysticism is very compatible with the sorts of mystic ideas that Epstein seemed to be involved with. Shia Islam is also straight up Neoplatonism. Mm. They even say, no, the Quran is actually a mystical Neoplatonic text.
Interesting.
Which is the earliest antithesis of Christianity. The earliest church fathers that were defending the Trinity were fighting Neoplatonic doctrine. So Christianity is not Neoplatonism. It is Trinitarian, which is not Neoplatonic. They had to fight the Platonic Academy. That's why St. Justinian and Byzantium, he outlawed the Platonic Academy because there was so much confusion and chaos that Origenism and the Neoplatonists were causing. So that's what I would say is the real Abrahamic faith, and these that she's talking about are much more amenable to the sorts of mystical versions of Islam or Judaism.
Right, which goes pretty far, especially when you get into the Kabbalah stuff. Man, absolutely fascinating. Again, the book is Esoteric Hollywood 3, Sex, Cults, and Apocalypse in Films. You can get it at jaysanalysis.com, Jay Dyer on YouTube, and at Jay Dyer on X. How do we find your stuff, Jamie?
On YouTube, it's just Jamie Hanshaw, and then on X, it's Jamie Hanshaw Dyer.
Jamie Hanshaw Dyer, and your book's available at Jay's Analysis as well.
They are, yep.
Awesome, and so what's next for y'all? Are y'all on the road, or?
Yeah, we got a whole bunch of podcasts. We're going to be doing Kurt Metzger right now. We're going to be doing Jesse Lee Peterson. We're going to be doing Hodge Twins, whatever podcast debate, a lot. Kennedy.
Y'all are on a tour.
Yeah. Who,
Jamie Kennedy?
Yeah.
What's he doing?
We've done a bunch of
his. It's a tinfoil hat now.
Yeah, he's a.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know
he's
that. Really,
yeah, he's great.
I just used to watch his show on UPN.
I'll have to send you our interviews that we've done. He's fully. You should try to get him on.
I should. I had no idea.
He knows all this stuff.
Yeah. He was like the funniest dude ever back in the day. Yeah, he was great.
What's up?
Dude, he's got some classics, man. Incredible stuff. Jay and Jamie, thanks so much for being here with us. Thank you.
As InfoWars not delivered. In Gladiator, he chops up the first four guys when they throw him in the ring, or you know, in the arena, and he says, "Are you not entertained?
Are you not entertained?"
Well, I would say to you, are you not satisfied? Have we not delivered in the fight against the globalists? You bet on the right horse, and I'm asking you to continue to bet on us as the InfoWar continues on, regardless as we refuse to submit to the tyrants. But the reason this is such a win-win or a non-zero-sum game or a 360 win, the term I coined over a decade ago, is because everybody participated, supports freedom, supports the fight against tyrants, the fight for team humanity, against the globalists, and you get incredible products at the same time. So if you haven't tried ultramethylene blue or our bovine colostrum or our CMOS or our Shilajit, these are all incredible products available right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And if you're going to buy anything on the site, you become a VIP for $30 a month, cancel any time for free, and instantly $40 is put in your account. The second you click in a VIP, when it recurs each month, instantly $40 goes in. So you make $10 to spend on top of the $30 you spend. Special deals, special offers, and with one click in your profile, you cancel anytime for free. So it's a very light commitment, and you get special deals on top of everything else. So anybody buying anything
on thealexhenson.com should be a VIP, so make sure you do that. You have until the 17th of March to take advantage of the March mega sale at thealexjonesstore.com. This is one of the biggest sales of the year yet, up to 40% off store-wide. 25% off on the shirts, on the hats, 10% off on things like the collectible knives, and up to 40% off on supplements like Ultramethylene Blue. And the more you buy, the more you save. So take advantage of the March Mega Sale right now, running until the 17th at thealexjonesstore.com, and be the reason we'll always stay on the air. I'm going to salute you and thank you. Take action now.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.